The greatest limitations in life are the ones we place on ourselves. You're listening to Podnuts Pro, your podcast for business IT support. And now, your host, Marvin B. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from the glorious state of Florida. Yes, we just had Hurricane Elsa down in my part of Florida. Not a peep. On the west coast of Florida, home of the new Florida man, Mike Smith, they had a little bit of weather. So that has passed us. It is now moving up into the state of Georgia. We'll be passing through the Carolinas. I think everybody's going to be okay. It hit as a tropical storm, although it did reach hurricane status just west of Tampa. It slowed down to 65 miles an hour by the time it hit just north of Gainesville and south of Tallahassee. But that will be your weather check for today. I should say right off the bat that I do want to thank my good friend Mike Smith. Some of you may have tuned over into Podnuts Pro after watching his show. Mike Smith normally does his show on Thursdays. Tonight he had a special condition where he needed to do it on Wednesday, and he reached out to me and said, I will do it before your show. And as a result, some of you have moved over from his show into mine. I want to thank you for watching, for listening and supporting. Mike does a great show. For those of you that are Podnuts Pro listeners and have not heard of Mike Smith, you might want to take a look and listen to his show. He does a show that is fantastic. It's just him, but he's talking about stories from the trenches, all the stuff that he goes through each week, the trials, the tribulations. He gives excellent tips on things that come out in the news, such as the stuff that we've had recently with the print issue from Microsoft. And he talked about Synology NASes, which I'm a latecomer to the Synology game, but I'm in it. And that will be a topic of this show in the future. So I want to say thank you to Mike for that. I do want to say thank you again for joining us here. If you ever want to find out what's happening with the show, head over to podnutspro.com. And we have all of the past shows there. We've got links on how to support the show. We've got, well, there was a blog page that I took down because I wasn't really doing it right, but that will be up as we start to post stories and links to other things on that page. And videos where I show up in other podcasts will be there. And then if you are using the Chrome browser or the Edge browser, on the front page there will be an Amazon bar that you can see some of the things that people have purchased in the Amazon store to support the show. I urge you to look at that, click on that, and support the show. When you click on those links, you go to Amazon, you buy stuff as you normally do. Doesn't cost you any more, but a little bit of commission will come back to the show. And yes, Taz, you can go ahead and post the link to the Mike Tech Show in the chat there. I thank you for listening, and we support each other. So you will see the link come up just briefly, folks. For those of you that are on YouTube, it'll show. We'll have to make sure that somebody puts it on the Facebook feed as well. This show is here every Wednesday night, well, most Wednesday nights, at 8 p.m. Eastern, and we stream live on YouTube and the Facebook. You can always hear the audio version in your podcatcher. Just head over to podnutspro.com. Select which podcatcher you want to use, and that will be the show. So just to give you a quick intro into tonight's show, this is a continuation of our summer tech series, All Techs, All Summer. Tonight we have Chad Kemp from Fast Computers, the King of Canada, is in the house, and we are going to be talking about making the transition from break-fix to managed services. And we'll have some great information from Chad. And why don't we do this? Why don't I just go ahead and bring him in here? He is patiently waiting in the green room. So, ladies and gentlemen, Chad Kemp from Fast Computers. Chad, how are you?
I'm doing well, Marvin. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Where are you? Are you in the, that doesn't look like a dungeon. I see outside.
This is the new house. Anyone that's seen me on here before heard me complaining about the build process. Well, I'm actually living in it now, so I've stopped complaining.
probably at the insistence of the wife, right?
No, she actually complains more than me, honestly. She says I don't complain enough, which is great. We're a great team. Great team.
Okay, I get that. All right. So I do want to say up front, Chad, thank you very much. Chad was not the original guest that was planned for today's show. But as always, Chad is available and willing to help and share his thoughts about the industry as we know it today. So I do want to acknowledge Chad. Thank you very much for being available.
No problem, Marvin. I'm always happy to be on the show.
All right. But I'm not going to let you out of the Florida Man versus the World segment as we move on into the show. So let's see what gator stories you come up with.
I'm always just wondering, every time I see something in the news, an alligator attack or something, I'm like, is that Marvin's? I saw somebody the other day, their wife ran into the, I should have linked it for you. I saw somebody's, there was an alligator and it was like coming across the yard and somebody's wife like ran at it, yelling at it, telling it to get off their lawn. Again, I was wondering if it was your alligator, but or it could be a crocodile. I'll be honest with you. If I saw one coming at me, I'm not sure that I could identify it.
That's just a Tuesday down here. You don't have to make a big deal about that.
You guys are a different breed. That's all I can say.
All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and move the show forward. And we are going to do our normal segment at this location. In the news. While most of you have been reading and pondering and talking about the Kaseya incident, you might not have noticed that cloud backup and cyber protection provider Acronis is going to be hiring GoDaddy veteran Patrick Pulvermueller as CEO. Now, the rumor is that they will be redefining how service providers leverage remote monitoring and management and professional services, so RMM and PSA, though they did not make any specific PSA or RMM product announcements. Still, the PSA and RMM tester, or teaser, I should say, is rather interesting considering Acronis partnered with ConnectWise in June of this month on an MSP-centric BDR dashboard. So, the CEO transition comes at a key time. Acronis raised roughly $250 million in new funding in May of this year at a valuation of more than $2.5 billion. The new funding featured CVC Capital Partners, and then earlier investors, including Goldman Sachs, have retained their stakes in the software business. And people should be paying attention to Acronis. And in Florida news, a Florida man pretended to be a firework, screaming noises in the middle of the night. So ahead of the 4th of July weekend, residents of Cape Coral, Florida, which is up near Tampa, were woken up by fireworks, but not what you're thinking of. On the night of June 25th, Sarah Warnicky could hear a man screaming very loudly at 3 a.m. in the night. When she went out, there was not much to see, so she shouted, telling the man to shut up. To that, the man pretended to be a firework and yelled, conveying that fireworks were really annoying and people should stop doing it in the middle of the night. He was caught on security tape screaming fireworks noises across the canal in the southeastern 10th Avenue of town. In the video, a man can be heard screaming, "Firecracker, firecracker, boom!" To that, Warnicky shouts, "Shut up!" Replying to her, he screamed again, using expletives, "Bottle rocket! Yeah, it's bleeping annoying, isn't it? Quit bleeping doing it in the middle of the night." And I will have the link in the show notes so that you can read the rest of the story.
Wow.
So, that's your Florida Man story for today.
I'm amazed you continue to deliver Florida Man news day after day, week after week. you'd think you'd run out, but there is an infinite supply, it seems.
Well, Florida is the fourth largest state in the country, so.
Sure, I'll go with that.
And of course, you know, half the country's moving here, you know, because we don't adhere to COVID protocols.
I've heard some crazy stuff, but honestly, as I said before, you know, half of my province lives in Florida half the year. You know, it's the only state I've ever been to where it's not surprising to see Ontario license plates when I drive around. It's just not
surprising. I believe we just finished the season. So during season, it's probably 5 out of 10 license plates are Ontario or Quebec.
And this year has been a little bit odd, so I don't even know how it translates. But yeah, as I said, every time I'm down there, I'm like, am I in Florida or am I on the 406 or the I-75? You know,
Yep. Oh, man. All right. So, Chad, let's move on to our topic. And I know that I kind of brought it to you pretty quick here. So I'm not sure how much you prepared. But I know that you love talking about this type of stuff, especially when you can hammer the man in the van, right?
Hey, listen, you know what? Like, I don't even know. Do you even have a van? I actually have a van in our fleet. I have a Transit Connect. So I was thinking about that before the show. I was like, am I the man with a van? I don't know.
So I don't have a van, although we have been looking at vans because one of the goals, and I don't know if you've been paying attention to my Facebook, so we just moved over. Well, we didn't move. We took over additional space. So we now have our proper half of the building. So now the next stage is to get the other half of the building, which does have a garage, nice. To which I can put the van inside.
Hey, I you know what? It's not a little bit of a segue, I guess, on this, but the Transit Connect, I could not believe how expensive they were when I was buying it and shopping for it, because you can get a loaded Escape for the same amount of money. But after having one for a couple of years now, they handle wear and tear way better than a normal vehicle. Mm-hmm. The rubberized everything, the heavy, you know, everything is all, and it's been great.
Now, when you got yours, did you just get it kind of base and then add your stuff to it? Or did you actually do some customization when you got it? Because I know that some people have actually, you know, bought the custom shelving and that sort of stuff. Did you do all that?
The dealership, so just full disclosure, I buy a lot of vehicles from this particular dealership, and we have a very good relationship. They're also a client of mine. And so to say that they don't really steer me wrong, I trust them a lot. So they had their outfitter that they use do it. They actually, what they did was they brought a big boy Transit, you know, the full Transit, full-size van. They brought one of those loaded with shelves and ladder racks just to the max. And they said, okay, here's types of drawers, here's types of shelf. Anyway, so we did shelves on both sides on the inside and no ladder rack. In hindsight, I probably should have put a ladder rack on the outside. I didn't because we don't do a lot of structured cabling or anything in-house, so ladders aren't always required, but it's become very inconvenient to not be able to do that. And I did it mainly because then you can clear any underground parking with no issue.
Right.
Now the shelving was a mistake. I should have only done, and again, I have a Transit Connect, which is the 2-seater smaller van, right? It's a little 4-cylinder. I did shelving on both sides. It leaves about 19 inches in the middle, which is enough to slide a server down. But when you're trying to load MF, like a multifunction copiers and stuff, it's not a lot of room. We have to load through the doors. I have sliders on both sides, and I didn't block the doors with either of the shelves. So the shelves are in the back portion, and my back door is open 180 degrees or whatever that is. But yeah, I would have done it. So my recommendation, and we did a metal wall, if you will.
Okay.
Between the front seats. And that prevents the guys from getting hit in the back of the head if they hit the brakes hard.
You may need to say that again because you froze up on our connection here. So I saw that you said when you do something, you did this and then it messed up.
So I'll try again. Sorry about that. So when I got the van, I have shelves on both sides. I then have a wall between the front seats and the back area.
Okay.
What I should have done is had the shelving only on one side, but block the door or not order the door on that side. And had just a full wall and then left the other side totally open. because that would have let us load full-size copiers and things like that and servers in the back door. Currently, we have to load them through the side door, and it's really awkward. But it's functional, and I definitely recommend the wall with no windows on any of the doors or walls, and with the metal wall in the front, you can't see any of the cargo. So you have no idea what's in there.
Good. So when I say we've been looking at vans, I'm not lying. We actually have looked because last year we did a lot of recycling pickup. Companies that, you know, either did a network refresh and didn't have recycling or didn't have a place to take that stuff, we took it. Because basically every other month I have a recycler come to my office and take what I don't want after I pilfer through it and scrounge and plunder and all of that. So instead of me having to rent a van, I figured I should have a van and then I could be the man in the van. But it just made sense to have it, and that way we can do all that. And, you know, you are right. Being able to pick up those bigger printers and copiers is a big deal.
It is. And we looked at getting a full-size van, like a full transit or what would have been an E150 or E250 back in the day. And it just didn't make sense because we're not carrying the kind of weight that's requiring. The current van gets mileage in a single, well, liters per hundred. But what is that in your thing? I think like 30 miles per gallon or something like that. It gets very good mileage for a brick. I should mention that we have an extreme thunderstorm warning in effect. You may have been seeing the lightning. And we have 100 kilometer an hour wind. So I should be okay. I have some redundancy built in here, but just a heads up.
I just thought that was your, you know, dancing room on the other side of the house there. The great room. I figured the wife was, you know, entertaining or something.
I normally do the things over there, but I actually, in my daughter's room, I didn't want to take over the whole house by sitting in the middle of it.
Get out, kid.
Yeah. But she's got the great room in the big area. I'm in the you know, the little room.
Okay. All right. So let's do this. Let's, before we get too far into the weeds, why don't we have you describe how you started your business? Because this is, I think, an interesting transition for both of us. I started my business in 97. You started in 98. I started my business because I got sick and tired of being at the repair store and my boss not thinking that we should do outside repairs, go to businesses, that sort of thing. But I still had a mind shift that I was going to run a store. I thought I'd run a store and have, you know, businesses that would, you know, call us out and stuff like that. Well, never did the store. But it took me a long time to get to managed services as well. So I wanted to hear your story. How did you get started and what was your path?
Yeah. So back in 98, I knew I wanted to do computer stuff. It was terrible. I was the proliferate trunk slamming, you know, ponytail, whatever you want to call it guy. I was the guy that everyone like didn't charge enough money, didn't really have a good grasp on running a company. It was all muscle and feel and trial and error, and I made lots of mistakes. However, what we started with was selling computers. I was doing custom computers and things like that. And then I started doing businesses because, I mean, it's not really a secret that, you know, doing a business with 20 computers is a lot easier than selling 20 computers to individual people. And back then, they were all white boxes. We were an Intel partner program. In the very early days, like 98, 99, 2000, I was even one of those people that were like, this is the year of the Linux desktop. I was actually replacing NT domain controllers with Gentoo Linux because I had the attitude that if you didn't need the driver, why did you compile it into your operating system? That makes no sense. So we were bootstrapping Gentoo specific to the hardware we were deploying. This, by the way, makes me all cringe now in compared to what we do now. But we were doing that. And I mean, the customers were happy. Like, we actually emulated roaming profiles and all kinds of stuff using Samba, handwritten conf files and everything. And the problem back then was, even our firewalls, they were, what do we use? We had a BSD, was it FreeBSD? I think it was FreeBSD. And we wrote our own, config for the firewalls. And we were using old recycled workstations with a second NIC in them. And like, it was all about minimizing costs and that sort of thing. We had some schools as clients, some private schools. And, The thing was, what I learned very quickly, well, maybe not that quickly, it took me a couple of years, but what I learned pretty quickly is that when you say run my custom Linux distribution, or when you say this is the firewall that I'm going to scratch build out of a whatever, anything that goes wrong is your fault. If you work for the man, and by the man, I mean, I immediately after that started doing Cisco, IBM, and Microsoft. Basically, I just was a total sellout. Like, I went 180. And when I did that, I noticed that it would be, oh, Cisco, oh, Microsoft, oh, IBM. And I was like, oh, it's not my fault. That's interesting. And I'm not talking about screwing up, right? I'm talking about just, you know, a bad patch or something like that. A bad patch on the Linux boxes was my fault. A bad patch on Windows was Microsoft's fault. Very strange, but that's how it is. So we muddled around a bit more for a couple more years. It was around, I think, 05, 04, 05, I decided that I drank somebody's Kool-Aid. I forget whose it was in hindsight, but it was basically, you need recurring revenue. If you're not getting recurring revenue, you're an idiot. I mean, I'm being blunt about it, but that was sort of the messaging that was beat into me. And this is when a managed service provider in 04, 05 would have been a very big firm. So you didn't really, you wouldn't have had a 1 or 5 or 10 person company calling themselves an MSP. When I talked to Enable for the first time in 2006, they were implying that small clients had 500 endpoints. So you should start out with 2,500 or 5,000 endpoints so that you can get a few clients. And those were purchase only back then. There was no SaaS. There was no, you know, start with 10 agents or 100 agents. No. You cut checks for big money and they all did financing in-house. So I'd say we muddle around for a year or two. It was probably around 2007. I said to my brother, who still works for me, with me since then, I said, I'm kind of just a guy that fixes computers. Like I'm like a technician that I'm like a contractor. I'm not a business owner. I'm a self-employed person. That was, I think, the word I used to use. I said, I think I want to give a shot at running a real business. I said, so what do you say? You come work with me. And we'll see how that goes. And he said, okay, that sounds good. So I took a contract with a Fortune 500. It was the company, my company had the contract, but it was kind of close to like job-like. Like it was, I mean, I set my own hours and I met all the requirements of being, being in my own company, but it wasn't something I would do now, we'll say. It was, I don't know, 9 months. And so I took that and I made a bunch of money from that, and all the money I just funneled into the business. And what we did was, around 2008, yeah, early 2008, end of 2007, early 2008, I decided I wanted a brick and mortar location because I wanted a store. Now, 10 years earlier, that would have been an amazing idea. I kind of got in with the whole store idea right at the end. Like any later, and I would have said it was a very bad idea. When I got in, it was still okay. Questionable, but okay. So we opened a store, like in a strip mall. I had, 900 square feet, had offices and stuff. And we started doing, they were mostly block hour contracts at that point, but we had block hour contracts and we had some what would be considered all you can eat now, but not many, I mean, two or three. And so then we started rolling with that. And, we were still a system builder. We were still doing all that stuff, but we were doing it with, Microsoft components. The servers were IBM. The networking was all Cisco. We were one of the first partners in Canada around 09 to get the select certification and sell the phones, the UC520s and UC540s. I don't look back fondly on those. We were doing a lot of small business server. We were doing that already. Like 2003 was the first small business server suite we were selling. And I honestly thought that the next 20 years was going to be new version of small business server every 5 years. And, that's what we were going to do. Right. And I'd say we really hit a stride around 2011, 2012. So keep in mind, since 2006, 2007, I'm what you guys now would call an MSP, right? I had recurring revenue. I had endpoint management. I had all that kind of stuff. But around like 2011, 2012, that's when I really hit a cadence. We were building our own BDRs out of StorageCraft, and then our low end clients, we used QNAP NASes. And then, on our higher end clients, we used Microsoft or IBM servers. We were, in Lenovo, IBM, and then we transitioned to Lenovo servers. And then everyone had like virtualization and all that. And we had SBS, we had those. I then started building up the contract with what they included, and it was a really solid offering. And we were getting out and we were adding clients and a lot of small clients, 5 to 25 seats. We were adding a lot of those. And then around 2015, Datto finally came to Canada, and I got a call from Irvish. I don't know if anyone knows who Irvish is. And he said, listen, I'm now over here selling this stuff. Do you want to give it a shot? And I knew him from Level Platforms back in the day. I said, well, you know, I said, what we're doing works. He said, just try it out. And if it doesn't work, just send it back. I was like, okay, I'll try it out. So I got an Alta. And it worked really well. And I said, well, I think we're going to get rid of all the NASs. We're going to get rid of them because now I don't have to buy that. You guys know how the Alta price, we're not going to get into that. So the pricing worked out where I could get rid of the NAS units and I could put these in. And back then they had it was based on storage, the pricing. So I think I was like 150 gigs in a cloud is what I was paying for. And there was no agent cap. It was like, so I would have these small clients with SBS and then like an RDS VM or two VMs, like a DC and an app server. And I was back in the month with like this Ultimus. And then for our bigger clients, we started putting in the Cirruses. And I quickly realized that, you know, when we were doing StorageCraft, great product and everything, but it required technical skill set. Like you actually had to know what you were doing to manage it. But when we went to Datto, I was able to offload like a lot of the file restores and things like that to more entry level technicians. And anyway, so we really hit a stride with this. We really started moving these out there. And then I realized that I think at that point, yeah, that was around the time when I met Gary Pica, and we started doing like the all you can eat and that's it. I did that for a year or two, decided that wasn't for me. I was okay with not just selling chocolate cake, but selling ingredients. We moved on to focusing on things that would get us in the door with recurring revenue, because that's our philosophy, and then expanding our portfolio with the client. So as a good example, Datto is my favorite. We would get into clients, and this got us into larger clients too. We would get into clients, and when we were selling it, we weren't selling the Fast Computers backup solution that I cobbled together and had supported. This was a real company behind it, backing it. And so we never attempted to white label it. We very proudly said it was a Datto and how great Datto was. And we would get in, we would put a Datto in, and then after they had that, we would then look for other services. Now, over time, when 365 became popular, we started putting in 365. Then we put in spam filtering. Then we put in, then we started trying to get the hardware sales. We would do all the laptops, desktop servers. And anyway, the you know, we sold one customer a Datto, and that led to SAN, a whole bunch of servers for their cluster, 365. To this date, they have several hundred seats with us now. And that all started with getting in the door with the backup solution.
So let me ask you this. So when you decided to make that move, mm-hmm. and you had to go to your first customer, did you do a transition to where you took an existing customer and moved them to managed services, or did you pitch the first new opportunity that you had for managed services?
No, it was a conversion. So back in around like 08, 09, I guess it would be around there, we had a lot of customers that were on this sort of, I don't know what you want to call it, like, you know, some of them were on retainers, and it was just a mess, right? And so what I did was I went to a couple of them that I liked, and I said, look, last year you spent, these are made up numbers, okay? Last year you spent $12,000 with us. How about next year you just spend $12,000 regardless? I said, and rather than waiting for things to break and calling us and us making more money when it's more broken, you pay us $12,000 and we do everything we can to make sure you don't call us, because spending 20 hours today may not be a justifiable invoice, but we may know that it'll save you a lot of time, well, us time and you money down the road. And they said, well, that makes a lot of sense. Great, let's do it. And then we signed up a handful of existing clients. And you've kind of alluded to something. This is how I got in bigger clients. I got in bigger clients because I had these clients, then these clients, then these. I didn't go knocking on my first 2,000 employee company's door and say, hey, guys, I fix computers. I think you should work with me. It didn't work like that.
So, you know, the reason I asked that is because the way that I got in was I kind of slid in through the back door. Now, you know that most of my clients are attorneys. Mm-hmm. And my very first client that I obviously couldn't call it managed services back then because I didn't know what that was.
Right.
But they understand the term retainer.
Right.
So I got, I think it was a 20-person law firm to allow me to put them on retainer so that way we could do their stuff. And the retainer, and it was funny because I actually went back and pulled the invoice because I wanted to make sure I got this right. I remembered that it was $600 a month.
Okay.
And this was back August 1999.
Okay. Oh, you did this back then. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, and it was funny because the invoice I have, monthly server maintenance, one at 105.
Okay.
11 system maintenances at 45.
Okay.
And that was my first go at retainers, but really, in a sense, is what people are doing with managed services, because that's how I did it. But I got them to use the term retainer, and then basically I transitioned that until, you know, hours at a certain rate, where it kind of like the block hours. So the very next customer that I got to do this wasn't until 2002, and it was a much bigger client, but I got them to do 15 hours a week. So 15 hours times 4 weeks was 60 hours at $55. Well, so $3,300, and this was in August of 2002.
Okay.
Now, the funny thing was, I had no tools.
Right.
I had no RMM. I was just selling hours is what I was doing. So it wasn't until probably around 2012 that I actually started to get the tools. So you mentioned that, of course, Datto was your entry-level point into managed services. But in terms of other tools, what did you use to start out with?
Yeah, no. I would say to get into managed services, Level Platforms was our first significant tool.
We had
Level Platforms. It's
oh,
now,
okay.
I think it's Barracuda now.
Okay.
Right, they got bought by Avast. But anyway, Level Platforms, they were in Ottawa. They were a Canadian company. Them and Enable were across the street from each other. And I looked at Enable, and we looked at Level Platforms, and I forget the reasoning, but we ended up going to Level Platforms. We hosted it ourselves in a data center, you know, that we rented space in. And that was our first, that we were selling, you know, back then they had, it was all about the bronze, silver, gold plan, and it was all device based. And, you know, there was a lot of focus on patch management, and obviously AV and monitoring the AV to make sure it was, back then, of course, it was all about having up-to-date definitions and things like that. It's kind of funny how different things are now. But that was the focus. And, you know, we could clear print queues and just a little bit of automation, not quite like now, but you could do a lot. And we had to deploy collectors at all of our sites, which were like little, basically a PC, or you'd install it on their server or whatever. And anyway, that was what we started with. I would say that had the remote connection in there, like the remote connectivity and all the patching. We moved from that to Kaseya, because I had a lot of problems back then. Like we would get ghost devices. It was all based on WMI or whatever.
WMI.
Yeah. And so we'd have problems where a 10-person client would turn into a 50-person client, and then we'd have to get billing involved. It was a bit of a mess. So we moved to Kaseya, actually, funny enough, after that. And we used Kaseya for, I don't say like 2 years. I liked Kaseya a lot. Had KVNC was the remote app thing that was built in, which is basically VNC wrapped with their thing. And it was great. The technicians hated it. I loved it. So what happened around 2010, they're approximate. We talked to LabTech. It wasn't Automator ConnectWise back then. It was LabTech. We used ConnectWise for our PSA. We used that for a long time. We looked at going to this, and I hated it. I never liked LabTech from day one. I never liked it, but technicians loved it. And so I said, okay, fine. So we went to LabTech and we did that. And around 2014, right around the time that we did the Datto thing, you know, we had this kind of, I don't want to call it an epiphany or anything like that, but we got to a point where basically we had all the best in class tools. We checked all the boxes. We did everything the right way, but we didn't have enough customers to justify the scale we were at. And so I said, well, what's the most important thing in a business? Well, it's building a profitable, sustainable business for the long term, right? We're not about grabbing money today, but at the same time, we're also not about putting ourselves in the poorhouse. And so I said, okay, we're going to strip it back down. We're going to focus on, you know, what made us get to this point, where the success is, and see how we can scale it. So instead of focusing on all these tools that were very time consuming, I've told people for years, if you have LabTech or Automate, you need a LabTech or Automate engineer on staff to work on the system, not in it, on it. And if you do, it's probably the most powerful RMN out there. And I don't think most people will contest that. So I said, we don't need that though. Like, look, this is just not what we're doing. So we went to Logic Dog, Solar Hound Max, and we went to Repair Shopper, actually. We stepped away from ConnectWise. We stepped away from LabTech, and we went to those two tools. We loaded those on all our existing clients. I don't know, we had 500 or something like that endpoints at that time. And we basically started, we just started from scratch. Not from scratch, but we kind of started with a different mindset. So we spent a lot less time on the tools, more time with the customer, and then we were able to scale up faster with less staff. Because prior to that, we were always struggling to get enough stuff done, and everything just felt like it was always behind. So we did that, and the funny thing was, that was almost too successful. And what happened was, after a couple of years of that, we outgrew the tools really badly. Repair Shopper, I was doing $100,000 plus quotes in Repair Shopper, that when we converted them from a quote, we closed them, and we turned them into a ticket, basically. There's no structure breakdown. It's very much, here you go. So we'd have these huge projects, and it was just trying to keep track of what was happening and profitability. And they had no concept of tracking tech time for the sake of tracking efficiency. It was all about billable hours. So if you weren't billing for the hour, why would you log it? And so we went back to ConnectWise, and we went back to Automate. I didn't want to go to Automate. I actually wanted to go to NCentral, which was the Dog Hound Max focus big brother thing. They were the same company at that point. And they even had a transition team lined up to move you over. I let the technicians decide again. We went to Automate, and we were on Automate for 3 years. And I just got to the point where I was like, you know what, guys, we're just going to do things the way I want to do things from now on. So I said, goodbye, Automate, and brought in NCentral. And we have ConnectWise still, because ConnectWise is our, like, I don't think I'll change the PSA ever again. I really do like Manage. And then we have NCentral now. And we've had that for
our own. So let me ask this. So if you had to go back to the beginning and maybe give somebody advice, you know, whether they're, you know, a new company trying to, you know, hit the ground running as an MSP, or somebody that is at the point where they've got to pivot, whatever they've got is not working, would you say that they need to look at the tools as a whole in terms of RMM, PSA, whatever else, as a bundle, and try to, you know, figure out what systems you want in place and then get the product? Or do you get the product and then bundle your services around that?
You ever talk to a student at university and you ask them what they're doing, and they just tell you the degree they're in, but they have no idea what they're actually doing with the degree when they get out of school?
Yeah, those people say general studies.
General arts and science or whatever. Yeah, well, but the analogy I'm drawing here is that it's the same thing. I know a lot of guys, you know, our friend Stan, he's a small shop, but look how good Stan is. Some people don't want to have a huge staff. Some people don't want to scale a company to be a big company, but they do really well small. So my answer is, figure out what that is. Do you want to, I don't do any tech work, very little tech work anymore. So do you want to do that? Or do you actually like doing tech work? In other words, do you want to be the guy? In which case, you know, the answer is different. So that preface, I'm going to say that if I was telling somebody today who was telling me they just wanted to go and they're not going to grow, they like what they do, and they're just going to keep doing it, but they want to be more efficient at doing it, I'd say like Synchro with their RMM PSA all-in-one type of product, where it's very inexpensive. You're not going to bleed on the cost. And, you know, because every time you put out more money, you've got to bring in more money to offset it. And when it's just you, that's tough. So if you want to grow and scale, I think Datto RMM and Datto PSA, or whatever it's called, the Autotask or whatever, I think those are probably the my favorite. When I looked at Datto RMM, and the reason why we didn't go with it is, it's just, I like the old fashioned style of things. I like how things used to be. Datto is very modern. I really wanted to go there. So Datto RMM, Datto PSA, Datto PSA for people that want to scale up, and people who just like to suffer, Automate's a great tool. It's really powerful, but I actually never recommended it to anybody because it's just
okay. Yeah. So, just to let you know, I had a conversation with Datto yesterday.
Okay.
Because I figured it's about time for me to look at Datto RMM.
Yep.
Now, you know, I've been a SolarWinds guy ever since. What were they before SolarWinds?
Enable. I don't know.
No, they were separate. I didn't do the Enable side. I did the other one.
Yeah, but and now, though, there's no SolarWinds anymore. That's a different company.
Yeah, well,
don't kill my branding here, okay?
it's a mess.
It was called Logic Now.
Yes. Logic Now. That's what they were. So, but here's the thing. So, I haven't done the demo yet, but we just did the discovery call. And in talking through everything with the discovery call, as we would go over certain points, and I would say, well, do you have this? And, well, yes, but it's not fully integrated. Everything is still compartmentalized. So the reason I asked you before about, you know, the product line. So one of the reasons that I have stuck with what I have is because the core of what I do, the RMM, the patching, the antivirus, the web protection or DNS filter, whatever you call it, and a basic cloud backup, it's all there.
Yes, so you've just hit the nail on the head. So that's the problem and the solution at the same time. So if you're staying small, I agree. It's very simple. It's all there. However, as you scale up, it's limiting. You're stuck with that. You can't really break away. And so as an example, if you're using Datto RMM as an example. I can use Automate if it's easier, but we'll use Datto RMM for this. So you've got your built-in Bitdefender, AV Defender, whatever they're calling it, right? And so, right? And that's what you're using. And as long as you're using that, it's great. Datto doesn't have anything built in. However, you can use whatever you want and it'll monitor it and help you push it out.
Yep.
So that's how it is. It's all about being compartmentalized because it gives you flexibility with great responsibility or power comes great responsibility. That's a Spider-Man quote for you. But basically that's really what it is. And that's why if you want to be one guy, you know what I'm saying when I say one guy, right? I mean that in like
You're talking about Stan. I know.
You want to be Stan. the thing is, why does Stan need all kinds of reports on productivity and billable hours versus non-billable? It's just Stan. There's no point. However, when you're doing performance reviews with employees and you need to provide this information, you're meeting with clients. So here's one. If you're meeting with a client and you've never touched any of their systems in the last 6 months and you're meeting with them to tell them about all the stuff you did with their systems in the last 6 months, you need very good and clear and concise, granular documentation. Maybe not to, like, I'm not saying to give them a book. I'm saying you need the information so that you can parse it yourself.
Well, and I'll tell you this. That was one thing that I did like. The reporting that Datto RMM has, at least from what I saw, because they did show me some screenshots of that, they look fantastic. The reporting that I have in SolarWinds, it's
okay. The other problem with SolarWinds, Logic Dog, Mac, because it was called Hound Dog, right? And then it got bought by... Right.
Well, it was GFI before.
It was
GFI.
Hound Dog was the original one back in the 2000s. Then they got bought by GFI Max. It was GFI Max. Then it became Max. Then it became Logic Now. Then it became
SolarWinds
RMM. At Max Focus. Then it was SolarWinds RMM. And then it was, Logic SolarWinds RMM. And now it is Enable RMM.
Enable.
Enable is the original company of N-Central, like I said, back model. So the thing is, though, is that you're seeing exactly what I'm talking about. It's granular. Here's another example. So with SolarWinds with your current one, the RMM thing you currently have, if you add 200 clients and each client has 100 devices, so you're going to have, 20,000 devices or whatever that is on there, you're going to find it's almost unresponsive. Like it just doesn't work right. The bigger RMMs like the Datto and stuff like that, they tend to have interfaces that don't work as well for a small number of devices. But they work really well at scale because you can sort and filter and things like that.
Okay.
It really depends on the direction. Like honestly, if anyone watching is, if they're looking to manage, a couple hundred devices and they're by themselves and they're happy with that, look at Syncro or one of those tools. But if you want to scale 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 devices, then you're going to find the big boy tools are better.
All right. So let me get to a question that I want to make sure comes up because I wasn't sure. I didn't want to talk about it because, you know, Kaseya has just been the talk for the past week. Mm-hmm. And was it yesterday? In like three different groups, yep. I saw the conversation turn to, is this the end of the RMM as we know it?
Yeah, see, that's I know. And there was a, we won't name who it was, but someone did a presentation today on how they've never used an RMM in 21 years. And the thing is that, like, I also know people who, you know, they bill a customer for quarterly maintenance, and that means they physically drive to their office, sit at every computer, and run Windows updates. And they look for toolbars and things to uninstall. And I mean, as long as what they're selling is what they're delivering, I have no problem with that. Like, you know, if they call themselves a, you know, leading edge managed service provider on the cutting edge of security, and this is what they do, I have a serious issue with that. And they're saying compliance is their thing or stuff like that. But if that's what you're doing, so, you know, I've been in the Lighthouse beta for a long time, the 365 Lighthouse beta, and I've been pushing Intune on clients for years now. And so if you're rolling out, you know, Intune and you're replacing group policy with that, and you're doing, you know, Lighthouse can actually do multi-tenant monitoring or your 360. I mean, you can kind of do stuff, but here's the thing. If your RMM does this, oh, I have an RMM, new customer, new site, download agent, install agent. Look, it showed up. Now I can click the remote control button. Well, yeah, you probably don't need an RMM at that point. For example, if you can do something like this, drop an agent on a new machine that you booted up and set it in the onboarding group, and then have it automatically download and deploy all the software you use, automatically technically join a domain. It could even do that, do all this other stuff, and then basically have it patch ready, you know, AV installed, everything done automatically. That's the stuff an RMM can do. But I do see all too often, install, what's the cheapest RMM? Install the agent. Now I have remote control. And that's not, yeah, you know, you shouldn't do that.
Shouldn't. All right. So did you, okay. So are you using both Datto and ConnectWise still, or did you move away from ConnectWise?
So no. I use ConnectWise. So my, you know, the old saying, do as I say, not as I do. Right. So I use ConnectWise Manage.
Okay.
I use NCentral, the Enable NCentral RMM. And I use Datto for the BCDR and SAS backups. We're a very good sized partner.
Yes, you are.
Right. That's sort of our thing. I don't know how far else down you want to go down the thing. We use InfoSec for phishing training, cybersecurity training, phishing. We use ThreatLocker for our top security package right now is, you know, BlackPoint Cyber. With the add-ons for compliance, logic, and 365, ThreatLocker. We don't have Sentinel One in the stack. We considered it, but with ThreatLocker, we use AV Defender right now, which is the Bit Defender built into NCentral, just like your RMM one.
Right.
But we've toyed with the idea of just using Windows Defender several times, like the actual Windows product. It's a very good tool. It's just difficult to manage it at scale. So, BlackPoint has talked about having, you know, them using that for monitoring that on their roadmap. If BlackPoint does that, we may just switch over to Defender, because, like, especially if you add Plan 2 or even Plan 1 to it from 365, it adds all the EDR functionality, control folders, EDR functionality that, you know, you get with these other tools. It's really a good product. It doesn't get the recognition because of the name, I think.
Yeah. All right. So you made a point earlier that I want to come back to as well, where people are looking at cost as a bottom line. And we know, you know, listen, I've not used Synchro, but I know that that is the darling of the channel right now. And I know that they are making upgrades and improvements and adding integrations and stuff like that. But do you see this trend where the commoditization of MSPs is going to be an issue? Because as more and more customers learn what MSP is, they're only looking at the price sometimes. How much can you provide for me and at what cost? And how much lower can you make it?
So I've actually seen the opposite trend. That was a problem. I see that as a past problem, not a present problem.
Okay.
That was a problem when every day you didn't turn on the news and hear about somebody getting slammed. That was a problem when our services were more around convenience. Like, oh, I have an MSP. They take care of my stuff. Call them when we have a problem. People were selling on, you know, the customer service side of it. Now people are concerned that they're going to get locked out of other systems. They're concerned that they are going to have their information leaked. They're concerned they're going to be extorted. They're concerned they're going to look bad to their clients because of a breach. And so they're starting to vet the IT companies a lot more. There's also going to be a problem in the next couple of years of the haves and the have-nots. I'm not sure if you've done your insurance renewal for this year. Everybody I know who renewed in the first half of this year pretty much doubled from last year. And I just talked to a mutual friend of ours, and I told him, I gave him my policy so he could see, because he was getting quoted a couple $1,000s a year more than me, and we're at the same company. And I said, here, you know, see why. And he had a slightly better coverages, but there was still a gap. So they called to talk to them, and they laughed at him and said, did you not see the news on Friday? We are raising all of our premiums on IT providers, that whole category. We get lumped in with, it's not just MSPs, right? But it's like system integrators and
yeah,
VARs.
Yeah.
So the problem is that, you know, like if your insurance, you know, the magic number is a million in revenue, right? Once you're over a million in revenue, your insurance goes nuts. So if you're, you know, typical MSP, but if you're doing, you know, 1 to 2 million in revenue or 2 to 3 million in revenue, and your insurance is, you know, 10, 15,000, like it's getting like, you know, it's going to go higher, not lower. That's just insurance. That's just a random example. You know, you were just talking about adding all the costs. You know, Blackpoint Cyber is not cheap at all, right? And, you know, when you start stacking other things on top of it, it doesn't get cheaper. It gets a lot more expensive, right? But I think that's going to be the problem. You're going to end up having the haves. You're going to have the good clients. They're going to have the MSPs that invest in the technology, the process. I think the process for you guys, I think is a lot more important. I know it's a lot more important than whatever tool you pick. I don't care if you're on, now obviously Kaseya's got bad optics here, but even the guys who are running Kaseya, there's some people we both know in the, certain channels, that were not hit. And it's because they had a lot of precautions in place and they were able to act quickly. Still unfortunate, still a crappy situation, but notwithstanding, if you have an extremely well-built, even with that, so your RMM is now dead. Now what? What's your incident response plan say? If it says, oh crap, close the door, don't answer the phone, that's not good. If it's, well, I guess I'm now using my backup tools. It's not as great, but at least I can help my customers. And for us, we always have a backup remote access tool to fall back on, always.
Yep. And I've been having that conversation as well because, you know, I do have a backup access program. And because most of my clients still have servers, if I can get to the server, I can still manage the networks and redeploy, you know, my other set of tools or fall back on some of the Microsoft tools for patching and stuff like that. So that is something. But you made a comment where the haves and the have-nots, but is it the people that do versus the people that don't? And what I mean by that is there are people that are using the MSP platform as just a way to quickly scale and make money.
Correct.
But not in the sense of using it to better protect their clients, which is the battle that I've been having with some of my clients because they've dealt with the MSPs where, look, as long as they can get to my computers, you know, that's fine. And they charge me a cheap rate. And I'm like, I can't do that.
Right. So what's going to have to happen is I had originally thought it was going to be some sort of governance. You know, you guys have HIPAA down there and you have PCI and some other stuff.
FINRA.
The only thing anyone cares about up here is CMMC, well, NIST with CMMC. And the only reason anybody cares about that up here is because they will lose access to the supply chain if they don't comply. And so I thought it was going to come from government. What I'm now seeing is it's going to come from insurance companies. The insurance companies are not going to insure these financial companies, these medical companies, if they're in a habit of losing all their clients' data, having it all locked, having it get extorted, having it just destroyed. Oh, all your patient files are encrypted with ransomware and you don't want to pay $1 million or whatever to get them back. Okay, bye. You know, now what? Now you're going to tell all your patients you've lost all their data? Like, so we're going to see, I think the insurance companies, you know, even though they're hurting me on the one side as they bill me more, I think they're going to play a part in this, because if they won't insure people because they don't have proper things in place. And again, putting a firewall in is useless. Putting in antivirus is useless. Like, I mean, I'm not, you know, just as well as I do that, you know, are you still doing Sonic Wall down there? Just do the Sonic Wall, right?
Yes.
So if you take a Sonic Wall and you find a guy who only does Palo Alto and give him that Sonic Wall and tell him to quickly deploy it in an hour, and then he's going to give you the Palo Alto and you can deploy it. No one's going to make an argument that Palo Alto is greater. Sonic Wall, they're both terrible. Like, you're both going to do a terrible job. And that's just a fact. So a well-configured tool, whether it's a firewall, whether it's your antivirus. How about antivirus eating your files? Like, if you don't configure exclusions properly and having it, you know, cause productivity losses. So my point is that when you're dealing with these, when you're dealing with these customers, they're the ones that are going to have to get hurt. And then they're going to turn around and they're either going to go to business or they're going to start complying, and they're going to start asking questions. And we, and I mean like everyone in the channel and who's listening and cares about this, need to be ready. Like, you need to have your own house in order, you know?
Yep.
Internally, how do you patch your own systems? How do you manage your own stuff? Like, how many, like, you know, and hopefully I'm not throwing you under the bus here, Marvin, but how many guys you know that sell SonicWall, Fortinet, Cisco, whatever, and, you know, they're running the ISP modem or something they wanted to show in their office, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a whole thing. Yeah, that is true. And that's where... So I'm trying to think when I started doing this. So when I started making the real transition, 2014, 2015, and I said, I'm going to commit to using the products that I sell.
Yep.
One, just for the simple fact is I need to know them.
Correct.
But two, as we're starting to deal with things like the HIPAA and the FINRA, I wanted to be at the forefront of saying, look, I not only am going to say that I'll protect you, but I can protect you. And here's why, because I'm not just going to throw a product in there. Let me go back. So the big customer I fired a while back.
Yep.
So when we were going through a transition, they were at the time 5 offices and they wanted to connect to a central server and run their SQL database and connect the offices and, you know, be a real connected law office. So they didn't think that I could do it. They didn't ask. They just didn't think I could do it. And so they found another company to come in. And the whole reason I got introduced to SonicWall was because this company came in and said, well, we're going to replace this and we're going to put in a SonicWall and that's going to solve all your problems. And I looked at the customer and said, I like that you're willing to spend the money, but that's not going to solve your problems. And the reasons were, and they had all these other things. Well, one, they didn't have the bandwidth to connect the offices.
Okay.
And two, this company actually never came in and evaluated their network to see what it is they wanted to do and how to protect them. So this company sold them and they came in and they put in all the Sonic Walls, which I benefited from. I'm like, that's great. Because I was still managing the network. This company was just, you know, they were making the sale and they were going to say that they solved the problems. Well, after a month, speed was horrible. Remote offices couldn't print.
Yep.
They couldn't stay connected. And the app didn't work the way that it was supposed to, even though. So bottom line is I got to the point where I'm saying, look, just because you sell something with a nice name on it doesn't mean you know how to configure it and work it. And so that was what I did. So I said, I'm going to start to learn these products so that big MSPs couldn't yell at the man in the van for not knowing what he's doing.
And I'm like, well, like, and likewise, like, as it, here's a great example. So let's say that we have a company that's got, you know, some really skilled senior people. And they roll out, you know, a terrific, terrific system for their client, very layered, you know, the firewall, the endpoint security, like the whole 9 yards, and not just that, but the process, 2FA, everything. And it's great. But then their junior people that they hire, their hiring process and training process is, oh, hi, junior. Here's a laptop. Here's a phone. Here's a YubiKey, you know, here's your 2FA YubiKey. you know, go at it, have a nice time. And then Junior's computer is local admin, no security, because he's just allowed to do whatever he wants, because that's what the senior guys do. And now all of a sudden Junior gets compromised. I don't even care how for this little conversation, gets compromised, period, because they're not running BlackPoint or anything. They don't need that, because they're right. And now he's now in the customer's networks. That computer is now a malicious actor. It's insane. So, you know, you are the weakest link. The weakest link is the weakest link. But assuming, you know, the MSP isn't doing their own due diligence, isn't taking care of their own stuff. No, we, like I said, we run BlackPoint Cyber internally. We, full disclosure, we do not currently have ThreatLocker on internally. That is a project I am working on. The problem with ThreatLocker is that it is too effective. And so it is very difficult to nail down on machines that change a lot. So, but everything else that I've said, we are running internally. We have a 48, my house, I have, you know, full to UTM services. This machine I'm on right now, the only problem, I'm in a forest. So I have a 25x5 connection, which is why I'm
in a forest, in a thunderstorm. I thought you had gigabit internet too, because
it's coming. I have it all trenched in, but it's not installed yet. Yeah, I got gigabit by gigabit coming. Yeah, they said it might be 10 gig by the end of the year. So here we go.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, we are coming up at the hour, so I don't know how much longer you're willing to stay with us, but we can end off the show. And if you want to stay afterwards for the post show, we can continue. We've got some active people in the chat here, so if they have questions that they want to ask, maybe we can do that later. Is there any other point with making the transition from break-fix to managed services that you wanted to make and just pound home?
If I could just make one point about anything, it's that you need processes for everything. You don't start with the tools. You start with what you're trying to accomplish. You build the process, and then the tool fits in the process, not the other way around. Don't buy a hammer and then hit it with your nail. It doesn't work like that.
All right. Start with the process or the end in mind. It's a nice little saying there. All right, my friend, I want to thank you for that. Now, your favorite part of the show, Florida man or random question? You probably didn't do your homework and find a
I have to go with random question. Yeah, that's all I got right now.
So nothing crazy happens up there is what you're saying?
Well, I mean, but the problem is
you're not in town anymore.
We have a lot of crazy stuff happen, but there is some political elements at play right now. So I really don't feel comfortable mentioning the crazy things that are happening.
Okay.
We'll just leave it at that. Random question time.
I got you. All right. So the random question here. Ooh, I don't think I like that one. So I'm going to go.
Thank you. I don't know what it is, but let's move on to the next one.
Well, here we go. I think this is a nice one. It's safe.
Okay.
And it is, if you inherited or won $1 million, what's the very first thing you would do with the money?
$1 million, it's a lot of money, but not a lot of money at the same time. I would.
Well, minus 30% for you, right? Is that
the... it depends. If I won it, our lotteries are tax-free. So I would go buy a Polaris Ranger Northstar UTV. With a plow blade on it. That is an air conditioned side by side. It's like an ATV, but it's you sit side by side. It's got air conditioning and heat and a stereo in that model. The North Star is the Canadian one, so it's all warm and everything. And then I'd have a plow on the front. So that's about 40 grand. And then I would take the rest of it and I would invest it into some very boring, ETFs that, pay a passive income. That's what I would do.
Interesting. I thought you'd pay off that castle first.
Yeah, well, no, because the ETF would generate more than, you know.
Okay. All right. Very well. Right there. And I don't know if this is in response to the random question, but a comment in the chat. I'm going to assume that if you want $1 million, what is the very first thing you would do? Hire a lawyer. I think that's a financial advisor, right?
Yeah. Well, I've got a lot of stuff in place. For me particularly, I already have a lot of stuff in place. So it's more of a really nice thing to have happen.
All right. Well, there you go, folks. So you have just listened to Chad Kemp, Fast Computers. And I'm going to try to clean up a lot of this stuff. There were a couple of times, Chad, where you dropped out and you got a little mumbled in there. I hope that the audio is not bad. I will do my best. So if you've gotten to this point in the show and you're saying to yourself, Marvin, what the hell are you doing? That's what happened. But we will do our best there. Thank you, Chad, for coming on. And next week, we are going to continue with our Summer Tech series. And one of the crowd favorites, Mr. Matt Rainey, will be in the house. We will catch up with him and see how things are going in the land of bourbon and donuts. And should be a very interesting show. So that'll be next week. And then the week after, we have the unicorn of the industry, Nancy Sabino from Sabino Comptech. And I think that there's a rumor that she will have a crazy friend with her. So that, too, should be an interesting show. So stay tuned for those. Again, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, streaming live on YouTube and the Facebook. And head over to podnutspro.com to follow the show. I think that's, I have to get used to that. The new term in social media is follow. You don't subscribe to anything anymore. You follow, which I don't know exactly what that means, but just do it and keep track of the show, folks. Tell your friends about us. You can even rate and review the show on podnutspro.com. So if you have comments about what you like, what you don't like, I don't care. Put it up there. Send an email to Marvin at podnutspro. Actually, Marvin at podnuts.com, and I will answer. And that is going to do it. So thank you very much for tuning in. For those of you that are live with us, stay through the video, and we will continue on with the post show. For those of you that are listening, thank you for downloading and subscribing. We'll talk to you next time here on Podnuts Pro. And until next time, holla.